The only daily Premier League podcast. This is Football Social Daily.
Welcome to Football Social Daily, Friday's episode of the daily Premier League news and reaction show on a weekend where there is no Premier League to speak of. It's that pesky fixture congestion everyone keeps moaning about this weekend as we turn our attention to the oldest and most respected cup competition in the world, the FA Cup. There is a full weekend of matches, some of which we'll be talking about shortly, with COVID firmly on the side of Swindon Town as they look to complete a giant killing over a depleted, virus-ridden Manchester City. But is that giant killing on the cards? We'll talk about that in a bit. Speaking of giant killings, I'm also going to be testing your knowledge on some of those big matches from the FA Cup's history later as we look at some of the biggest and best names to fall to lower league opposition. And there's some interesting transfer gossip going into the weekend too. We will run the rule over deals for Aston Villa, for Liverpool and of course for Newcastle, because they are the mainstay in the back pages at the moment. And to do that on today's show, it's a Marley Anderson and Joel Tudor kind of day. How you doing, boys?
Yeah, good. Not too bad. Happy with Kieran Trippier's announcement this morning, so the day's off to a good start. I just need to talk to you two idiots for 45 minutes now and get it over with.
We're not actually going to talk. I think we've talked about Kieran Trippier enough, to be honest with you, because it's been happening for about
We have
2 weeks, hasn't it? It's been looking like it's nailed on and it's finally gone through.
Yeah, enough Newcastle news now. I'm sick of it.
Oh, there still will be plenty more Newcastle news to discuss. Next? Yeah, who's next? That's a question. Well, some suggestions as to who might be next into St James's Park very shortly. But before we get started into the football today, we need to give a shout out to potentially Football Social Daily's most loyal listener. And I'm very happy for you if you're a listener to Football Social Daily and you think you're more loyal to challenge this. But I reckon Dave Bucket has to have this particular honour. He got in touch recently and shared his listening stats for last year. And he'd listened to Football Social Daily a whopping 4,936 minutes across the last 12 months of this podcast. Now, I did some maths on this and I worked out that 4,936 minutes is roughly 3.5 days of his life continuously listening 24 hours a day to Football Social Daily. So, Dave, well done. You deserve huge credit. You've clearly got tolerance and stamina beyond what anyone can imagine. And we are delighted to have you with us on the team. So thank you very much for listening. And like I say, if you think you are more loyal than Dave, get in touch, let us know. You can do it on Twitter, at The Sports Social, or why not leave us a review in Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts and tell us your listening stats for the year. Now, the great thing about that shout-out is sometimes when you do shout-outs on a podcast, you don't know if that person is listening, but we kind of pretty much can guarantee that Dave is listening, so it's good that he's going to hear it. But let's go on to the sporting action, because there is one big cup game to talk about, and that is of course Exeter City versus Portsmouth in the EFL Trophy. No, we're not going to do that, although if Niall was on the show today we probably would be doing that. Instead we're going to do Swindon Town versus Manchester City, which is the only FA Cup game that is happening tonight. And could we be heading into the first giant killing of the third round? Pep Guardiola will not be at this game. He's tested positive for COVID, along with a load of his team as well. 21 players and coaches at the Etihad are currently isolating with COVID-19. That includes 7 members of the first team. And I don't think there was a postponement request for this game, Marley, which is in direct comparison with the Liverpool game recently, I guess. Is that kind of what we need to do now as a sport in terms of football, is just crack on, use the depth of your team, use your development squad and just try and make these games happen rather than kick them down the road a little bit, particularly if arguably they're not massively important like this one?
I think you've sort of stumbled on the main reason. I think this hasn't been asked to be postponed because it's only Swindon. It's Swindon, they're a lower league club. Man City should beat them with a COVID outbreak or without a COVID outbreak. We don't know which players aren't available, but apparently there's 7 first teamers unavailable. We don't know who they are yet, but we're probably seeing the team tonight that it'll still be strong enough to come through the game. And I think if you applied for a postponement all you do is like you said, just push it down the road, and then you've got to fit in a game, you know, in a couple of weeks' time when you're trying to get ready for the Champions League coming back. And it just it clogs your fixture list up a little bit more. So why would you not just get this, try and get this done, and use, you know, a mix of youngsters and promising players, players like Cole Palmer if he's available, and Wilson Esbrand, the left back, and there's plenty of McAtee and people like that, you know. So they should have enough, whoever really plays, and I think that's come into the whole preparation thing. And even if Guardiola's not there, if it's a mostly youth team, as long as someone's there who's familiar with the youth setup and the elite development squad, they shouldn't have a problem against Swindon. I think that's really what it comes down to.
In fact, some of the fans I've seen on Twitter and social media seem really excited about the inclusion of some EDS players in this City team that's going to face Swindon. And I think, should we see more of that in cups anyway? Joel, should we see this mix of the big names and the youth talent? We're hearing constant complaints about fixture congestion, particularly from teams like Manchester City and like Liverpool and like Chelsea, who are top of the league, and yet they've got this youth team that they invest huge money in. Surely these cup competitions, be it the FA Cup or the Carabao Cup, are the perfect excuse to blood some youngsters and give them some proper game time.
Yeah, it's exactly right. I mean, it's probably one of the main reasons why a lot of City youngsters end up trying to go for new clubs abroad or get a chance at smaller clubs in the Premier League, just because if there's ever going to be a chance where you can actually play and show your talent and potentially be in Guardiola's thoughts for the Premier League, for example, you obviously need to play on a decent stage to actually show yourself. And it seems as though in recent years, because there's just so much pressure, especially for Guardiola to win titles, and because he's got such amazing depth as well. I mean, even his second team for Manchester City, that could easily challenge for the Premier League without a doubt. And even probably his third string team, it's just ridden with depth. And it's just the fact that he has the investment and the quality to do that as well. So it's just impossible for his youngsters to actually get any kind of game time. Obviously, Phil Foden's a bit of a rarity, but I think he's kind of a cut of cloth above the rest. But even still, there's some super young, talented players in that City youth setup. And they all end up going to teams and shining. And then, obviously, Sancho's probably the best story that's come out of their youth setup. Obviously coming to United for $75 million in the summer, which they sold for $7 million about 5 years ago. So, you know, if he would have gotten a run of games in the FA Cup, for example, potentially he might even still be there and had a shot at actually being in the first team. But it's the only competition, really, because the Carabao Cup has only got like 3-4 games in it anyway. And it comes so early in the season that the teams have enough depth to actually cope with it. But it's exactly like Marley said. I feel like this game is the perfect game for Guardiola to just rest all of his first team, considering that Chelsea are just around the corner in the Premier League. And he knows that if they postpone this fixture, it's going to get pushed right in between big games in the Premier League, Europe. And it's not wise for them to do it. And to be honest, even if he plays his fifth string side, it's probably going to have ridiculous amounts of quality in it. And it should be more than enough to cope against beating Swindon. But I think it's very calculated by City, to be honest. Like you mentioned, I think if they were playing, for example, Liverpool or Chelsea in this third round, I think the talk would be very different. I think it probably would have been postponed. But, you know, in the last 5 years, Guardiola's only won one FA Cup. So you would think that he'd want the best possible chance at actually winning it. But, I mean, Swindon shouldn't be too much of a hard task, because there's just ridiculous amounts of quality in that City side.
It's not just a problem with Manchester City youngsters getting opportunities. It's a problem right across the Premier League. And I mean, your team, Manchester United, there are very few youngsters there that are getting opportunities. My team, West Ham, again, the opportunities are very limited. It was quite nice in the Europa League recently when West Ham knew they'd qualified top of the group. They were able to play the entire development squad back four in their final game, and seeing those youngsters play together, I think, was really impressive, and seeing them step into the first team. But it doesn't happen enough, and it does feel to me that there is potentially a rule that could be written into the FA Cup or the League Cup that says you need to have a certain amount of under 21 talent playing in that competition without going the whole hog and going, right, we're going to put under 23 squads into this competition. But it does look like there will be some youngsters playing tonight, Marley, for Manchester City. You rattled off a couple of names there earlier. Who should we be looking out for amongst those City ranks? Who are the real promising pieces of talent that are likely to get a game?
Well, we all know about Cole Palmer, I suppose, like in his little breakthrough season. I mean, obviously, every name I suggest now depends on whether they've got COVID or not, because we don't know. which is annoying, really, because it's privacy and all the rest of it, isn't it? So, I think maybe we might see that Kaique, who they've signed from a Brazilian side recently. I think he's just joined. Sort of like September time, came over to England. I think he's like 17 or something, but he's meant to have a really bright future, so we might see him. James McAtee, like I said before, a lot of people are getting excited about. Joshua Wilson-Esbrand is another promising sort of left back, like attacking left back. He'll probably have eyes on actually making it into the first team with everything that's going on with Man City's left backs at the minute. There's never really been a solid permanent left back in Man City's team for the last two or three years. Even Cancelo is doing a job there. He's doing a hell of a job, but he's still not a natural left-sided defender. So he might have serious eyes on breaking into that team in the next couple of years. There's a fellow in midfield called, I think he's called Flavia or something like that, who's pretty decent, sort of a Fernandinho-ish role in midfield. So if we see these players, like they should have enough about them as well, like to see off Swindon, like, because we're forgetting, like, I'm not just writing off Swindon because they're Swindon. They've probably got a COVID outbreak as well, but we don't hear about it because they're Swindon. So do you know what I mean? Like, even they're going to be not at their best. I think they had a player at the weekend score a hat-trick at like 17 or something, but so they've got like enough of a sort of a chance at this. Like they'll properly go for this, and they'll be happy that, you know, the likes of De Bruyne and Foden and, you know, Sterling aren't gonna come up and just roll over them. But they'll have a go at the mix of youth and experience and, you know, untested, untried players, and hopefully try and nick something. But for Swindon, it's about the occasion. I think the owners have even said that on social media yesterday. They put a video out saying, like, it's a shame that you can't be here, Guardiola, but if you want to come to one of our games in the future, come and see what Swindon's all about. And I thought that if ever there was an offer to get politely ignored, it's probably that one. But never mind.
I mean, there are very few teams that are as well equipped to cope with development players coming into your first team squad than City as well, because of the way they've structured their academy and the way teams right the way through every level play in exactly the same way. They play the same style of football, they play the same formation, so it's very easy to bring in these development players and drop them in amongst the first team squad. So it's very difficult to see anything other than a Manchester City win, even with depletion in their ranks. I think the bookies have them at 16 to 1 off, I think it's called, isn't it? 1 to 16, basically, is the chances of a Swindon wins. So it's looking pretty unlikely. But when we look at this weekend ahead, so when we look at the games that are happening in the FA Cup third round, are there any that you look at and you go, that's the one that could be an upset? That's the potential game that we could see something interesting happening. So Joel, you can have your pick first.
I would probably go for the Everton and Hull game. I think that this probably could be Benitez's game that kind of...
I think Everton are going to win as an upset.
Yeah, exactly. if they can actually score a goal recently. But yeah, I think the dominoes are starting to fall for him at the moment, and he's just not getting what he needs out of the team. I don't know how well Hull are doing in their league, but with this Everton side, are they doing terribly well? I mean, that'll probably be even more of an upset than considering how poor Everton have been. So yeah, I'd probably take that one, and I wouldn't be surprised if they do end up losing that Benitez ends up going after it as well.
It doesn't seem to be as common nowadays, FA Cup upsets, as they used to be, Marley, but are there any that you look at that you think might potentially tip the apple cart?
I can't see Chesterfield turning up at Stamford Bridge and turning over Chelsea, like, but I was looking at maybe West Brom to knock out Brighton. It's that sort of top of the Championship versus mid-table in the Premier League. You're not sure whether how well Brighton will, how sort of seriously Brighton might take the FA Cup, but I think West Brom could do that. And there was Huddersfield as well. Huddersfield playing who was Burnley, so I think Huddersfield could turn over Burnley. Huddersfield are playing pretty well in the Championship. They think they're somewhere around the playoffs. And obviously, as we know, Burnley, if they're hit by any COVID outbreak, they've got a very, very small squad at the best of times. So they could easily struggle against a high-flying Huddersfield side who are getting their feet back under them after a poor season last season. So I'd look out for them too, to be honest.
A few games to look out for there. We're going to return to giant killings shortly as I test Joel and Marley's knowledge of some of the great giant killings in FA Cup history. We'll do that shortly, but first, it is transfers, and we're going to talk about that next on Football Social Daily.
Football Social Daily. Subscribe to the podcast now so you never miss an episode. Football Social Daily. Find more great sport at sport-social.co.uk.
Welcome back to Football Social Daily. As Marley already said, Kieran Trippier has signed for Newcastle United. There are plenty more Newcastle deals, no doubt, set to happen over the course of January until the window shuts. We've got some of those to talk about shortly, but before we do, I want to talk about Philippe Coutinho, who seems to be edging closer to a bit of a surprise move to Aston Villa. That's according to a number of different sources at the moment. A reuniting with Steven Gerrard, who of course he played with at Liverpool, and apparently it's Steven Gerrard who's been instrumental in convincing Felipe he wants to swap Barcelona for the Midlands. Did you ever consider this was going to be a likely destination, Marley, for Philippe Coutinho, Brazilian midfielder, Copa del Rey winner, Liverpool midfield? I mean, he's got like a pretty decent heritage, and with all due respect to Aston Villa, it feels like a bit of a step down, this.
Just slightly. I think Coutinho needs a home, doesn't he, really? He's had a crap few years since leaving Liverpool. The move to Barcelona was a bust. Hasn't really worked. They pay him too much. They pay him too much that they don't want to put him on the pitch, because if he plays well, they've got to keep paying him, if that makes sense. So, like, their financial situation's so desperate that they almost can't wait and try and coach him into being this amazing player, because they've put him on $500,000 a week or something ridiculous like that. So it's, you know, the business is not great, and it's affected him because he went to Bayern and he didn't really fit Bayern either. So I think he just needs a bit of love, and he would get that at Aston Villa, but it's I don't know enough about his mentality to, you know, does he want to dip down to that level and then fight his way back up? Because I think at this stage of his career, he knows that it's probably peaked. But it's about whether he's got the hunger to get back there or not. I was saying on the podcast a few weeks ago, if you remember, when players leave top clubs, I don't know what it just depends on their personality, whether they want to get back or they think, right, I've been there, so I've peaked now, that's it. And I don't know whether Coutinho falls into this trap or not, or whether he thinks, right, I've been to Barcelona, it didn't work, but if I play well for a smaller team, like really, really well, maybe I can get back to, you know, a top club in England or Italy or something like that. Maybe go back to Inter or something like that. But I think if he did go to Villa, Gerrard loves him, obviously, from the playing days. Gerrard's not going anywhere soon in terms of his future. He's going to be at Villa for at least a couple more years. So the move is there for him if he wants it, but it's just whether he fancies it or not. Because for me, he seems like a type of player that would go to China or America, or, well, maybe not China because they've got the salary cap coming in now, so it's kind of becoming a bit of a non-starter that. But he does seem like someone for me who would go back to Brazil before he would come to someone like Aston Villa and say, do I want to play in freezing cold Birmingham when I've been to Barcelona for the last 3 years and then I've been to Munich? Do I want to go home where my career started? So it just depends, but it'd be a hell of a result if Villa could pull him across to Birmingham.
Well, you say it's about him trying to get a bigger move and kind of using Villa as a stepping stone. Is there a chance that this is just a signal of intent from Aston Villa? They've already got Steven Gerrard. They have spent some money. The Jack Grealish money has been reinvested into players that look decent when they recruit them. Some of them worked, some of them haven't. But is this the opportunity for Villa to bring in players like this and go, look, we're meaning business now. We want to be a top six team in the Premier League.
Yeah, but I mean, they've not, I don't think they're at that yet. Like, everybody can say they want to be a top six, top eight team, but, you know, it's not as easy as just spending money and then the success comes. Because look at Everton, and look at, there's countless examples of teams that spend a load of money. Like, Villa have done it this year. They've spent loads of money on Bailey, Ings, Buendia, Martinez, and they're struggling in the bottom half of the Premier League. Like, that's how hard it is. So it's not just about signing these like fancy players who've been and done loads of stuff in their career, because it doesn't guarantee success. And I was thinking about this, what this sort of move reminds me of, and it's almost similar to James Rodriguez going to Everton, and we all know how that ended. And if this happens, they've got to be wary of that. Like, they've got to be wary about how arsed the player is to play for your team, especially if it's on loan or a short-term deal, because you have to look after your best interest in the future. And you look now and James is off playing in the UAE or Qatar or wherever it is, or Saudi. And, you know, he's just fallen off the face of the earth, really.
Yeah, it's difficult to see how a player is motivated by, again, with the utmost respect to Aston Villa, and I'd apply this to my team as well. If it was a player that has come through the teams you rattled off, Liverpool, Bayern Munich, Barcelona, how much pride and passion can they get from pulling on an Aston Villa shirt? How much motivation is that going to bring them? It's a really difficult balance to have. But you've got to hope that Steven Gerrard, being the man he is and being this as a player he knows, would be able to provide that motivation. One of the things I like about this transfer was Steven Gerrard talking in a press conference about it. And he said, this is a quote from Steven Gerrard, he said, he's won two league titles at Barcelona, two Copa del Reyes. If you go and have a look at his Wikipedia page, you'll see he's a serial winner wherever he goes. And I just like the fact that a professional football manager like Steven Gerrard does exactly the same as we all do. When we hear there's a transfer in the offing, you're straight on Wikipedia, you look at the stats, how many games, how many goals, we're all the same, professional footballers or just random football fans. Right, let's move to Liverpool next, Coutinho's old club, because apparently they're looking to bring in another attacking option. This is according to The Sun. They love a winger at Liverpool and they're chasing Colombian winger Luis Diaz from Porto at the moment. What do you know about Luis Diaz, Joel? And is he worth the $60 million price tag that he's being touted with?
Well, he's another one of Porto's amazing recruitment signings from South America. If you kind of cast your minds back, obviously they've got such a good track record in the transfer window when it comes to obviously like Radamel Falcao, James Rodriguez, and then they have Martinez. They've had a ridiculous amount. They made ridiculous amounts of profit, and it looks like this is going to be the same again. They only paid $5 million for him. I was looking into his background because I didn't know a lot about his background, and he was actually spotted by Carlos Valderrama in Colombia while he was playing for an indigenous side there for Colombia. And following that, they ended up paying $5 million for him to take him to Portugal. And in his first season, he got 50
Joel's
games.
Joel's been on Wikipedia.
100%. And I didn't know much about where he'd actually come from. But yeah, I remember watching a couple of games in the Copa America, and he is pretty electric on that left side. They finished third in the Copa America Colombia. and he ended up finishing top scorer with Lionel Messi with 4 goals, and I think that's been pretty much the kind of height of his career so far. And then obviously this season he's got some pretty good stats from the wing with 14 goals in 21 games. But if you just watch him, just typically he's kind of the typical Klopp player, I would say. He's very electric, he's got high energy in his press. And the fact that he's a winger, preferably on the left side, I think it says to me that Liverpool are starting to look towards the transition of their front three. Obviously not Salah, because he looks like he's about to sign a new contract, but potentially Mane. I think his position is potentially a threat a little bit, just because I think this is an issue that I spotted last year, which is the fact that they're all at a similar age, that front three, and they've all been continuously going at it for a good 5 years now at such a high level. And I was always concerned, I'd hope that they don't do very well in replacing them, but I was always kind of apprehensive of how they would actually go about replacing them, because obviously that front three has literally took them to ridiculous heights in this last 5 years. So I think with Diaz, if they do end up signing him, it'll be a very calculated move, because it's going to be an expensive one. It's rumoured to be like 60 million for him, which is quite crazy money, considering he's had probably two pretty good seasons with Porto. But I think it would have to be a very, very smart, well thought out recruitment, just because replacing someone like Mane, that's not to say he's going to totally replace him, but as we've seen with Jota in this last 2 years, Firmino's becoming a bit of an afterthought now in that side, just because Jota's literally made that kind of centre forward false nine role, if you will, his own. And that potentially could happen with Mane if he's not careful in the next 2 to 3 years potentially. So I think it's a calculated move by Liverpool, and it's one that's needed, because that investment is always going to be needed once you've had so many wins. You've had a Champions League win, you've had a Premier League win, and you can't keep resting on your laurels and thinking that this front three are going to keep to a high level. I think Salah's probably the only one now who's going to maintain that. I think Firmino will probably be moved on in the next 2 years, I would say. So they're starting to prepare for the future a little bit. And he does look a good player, but he's far from the finished product. But he does look like a typical Klopp player, I would say.
It does feel like the latest in the succession plan for Firmino, Salah and Mane that Liverpool have been trying to complete for a couple of seasons now. There does seem to be a plan in place there to rejuvenate that squad. Let's go to Newcastle then, Marley. And you're being linked with a number of players at the moment, as always, as has been the story of the last month or so. But one of the most surprising links for me today is that West Ham's Issa Diop, according to L'Equipe in France, is being touted as a new centre-back option, with a bid of £10 million being put in. I guess my first question is Diop an upgrade on what Newcastle currently have at centre-back?
I don't know, mate, to be honest. Because I think you tell me, because he's sort of lost his place, hasn't he, in the West Ham team?
He showed huge potential when he came to West Ham, which was, I'd say, two and a half seasons ago, wasn't he? Yeah, but he's very mistake-ridden, which is a bit of a problem for a centre-back. You can kind of tolerate mistakes in your full-back positions, but your centre-backs, you want them to be 100% dependable, don't they? But so, I mean, it's difficult to know whether he's a true upgrade on what Newcastle we have. I guess the question is, how bad are Newcastle in the centre-back position?
We're pretty poor. Really poor, to be honest. We're in a weird position where we've got loads of centre-backs. They're just all crap. which is, I don't even know who the pick of them probably is. Probably say our best, most solid defender is Federico Fernandez. And he doesn't get in the team when everyone's fit, because it's usually Lascelles and Fabian Schär. But to be fair to them, they're not the best defenders. Schär's are more good in a back three, because he likes to bring the ball out from the back and that kind of thing. Lascelles is very, very limited and the complete opposite. Does a lot of shouting and stuff like that, but he's not, in terms of talent, the most amazing defender. So I do think we definitely need improvements there. I don't know who it's going to be. The Tarkowski link seems to have gone a bit quiet. This Diop things came along, but I'm not sure. How old is he? Is that, he's like 22, 23? Because I feel like...
I think he's 24 now.
Is he? I feel like you need a bit more experience in if you're going to sign someone to come into a relegation firefight. I would want someone slightly more experienced or someone who's played at a higher level. But it's... He's, look, he's better than Kieran Clarke, so I'd take him.
Do you think it could be a good move for Diop, Joel? Because it wasn't that long ago that Jose Mourinho described Diop as a monster after West Ham beat Manchester United, and he was congratulating the West Ham scouting team for uncovering this gem from the French league. But since then, he's fallen down the pecking order at West Ham, as Marley has said. But he does seem to have some ability and he does seem to have some potential. So does he just need that opportunity now to become a first team regular? And he's not going to displace Ogbonna and Zuma at West Ham in those first choice centre back positions. So he needs somewhere he can go and prove his talent.
I think those comments were like the peak of his career. Once those comments happened, he just disappeared from the face of the earth. Yeah, I remember when he said that, and then instantly we were linked with, I think, a £40 million move for him that summer, which obviously didn't happen. But a player just needs a new environment to actually start getting a run of games. I think that's similar to with what's happened with Coutinho. He needs a run of games, and I think with Diop, it's probably the same. If you're around 24 and you're at a club and you're just not getting a look in, like, a career's short in football, and I would not be hanging around at all if I know that I could be a starter at another Premier League side. And it doesn't look like it's going to change at your current club, but I think everyone's thought around Diop is something that's been long in the past. That I don't remember even watching him for such a long time. It's been probably like 3 years before since he's actually got a long streak in that West Ham side. So I think it probably would be a smart move, and I'm sure the price will be nowhere near that 40 million mark that was being quoted about 3 or 4 years ago. So I think it'd be a clever punt, to be honest. I don't know, you can probably tell me better than I can if he's actually still the same player as he was when Mourinho did make all those comments, and he did have a decent run in that West Ham side. But I think what was the price around 10 million that was being quoted, which, I mean, it's pretty risk-free, isn't it? Especially if you've got the owners that Newcastle have. But, you know, and he's still young and he can still definitely mould into something very good. But as we've seen in football, to be honest, there's such a lack of top quality centre-backs that maybe it is necessary to take a punt on a player who does have that potential but just needs to be re-established in a first team again. So I think, considering how many goals Newcastle have shipped at the moment, I think anything's better than nothing, to be honest, and it could be a very smart signing, to be fair.
As you say, 10 million quid is absolutely no money in the modern transfer market, and Diop has shown potential his first couple of seasons at West Ham. He was pretty much an ever-present as a centre-back, but the last couple, I think he hasn't played more than 20 games or so under David Moyes, certainly as a starter, so he certainly feels like he needs a move to get the best out of his career. Loads of other players being linked with a move to Newcastle at the moment, Marley. I'm going to rattle off a few of the names that I've spotted today. I want you to tell me which one you think is the most realistic. It can be another one as well. It doesn't have to be one of the ones I list. So they're being linked just in today's newspapers with Divock Origi, Dominic Solanke, Todd Cantwell, and Anthony Martial, the Anthony Martial deal being a loan one just today. So which are those, or is there another name that you think could happen over the next week?
None of them, to be honest. I'd be too bothered about. I mean, Origi, I don't know, we still don't know how good Origi is. I don't know, if you start him 30 games, I've got no idea how many goals he'd score. I don't know whether it'd be 5 or 25. Because he seems to be like happy to be like a super sub, and he comes into Liverpool teams, doesn't he, and has like spells where he'll score 3 and he's in 4 sub appearances, then he'll get a start and play like absolute rubbish. So I wouldn't fancy that one. Dominic Solanke, I've given massive amounts of stick to on the podcast when Bournemouth were in the Premier League, because he was just a completely a striker that doesn't score. Like, that's your one thing. I think he went like 2 years without scoring a Premier League goal or something for Bournemouth. Never gotten one. Then he drops down to the Championship, starts banging them in. That's all well and good, but there's countless players who can do that and never get the sort of impact in the Premier League. So that's a huge gamble. And Bournemouth would want too much money for him as well, because they're entitled to want big cash for their top scorer. Todd Cantwell's not done much this season. He was good a couple of years ago when he came in at the Premier League as a very young player. He was one of the bright lights when Norwich went down. Decent enough in the Championship last season, but he's struggled with injury a bit this year and still don't know how good he is long term. And then Martial is his talent, but he's lazy and he's not what you know, you've got 6 months to fight off relegation. Do you want Anthony Martial in that fight? Is he going to roll up his sleeves? That's what I mean. Like, he's never rolled up his sleeves once. He wears gloves in friggin' August. Like, he's that type of player who would wilt, you think, unless, the only way to find out is to buy him, but would you want to buy him off what you've seen at Man United so far? There's no consistency. There's no, he's played sort of on the wing, and then he said he wanted to be a striker, then he was too lightweight and not great, not good enough as a striker. So there's even that, like, the whole move to me doesn't make sense, but he's available and people need to print columns and newspapers and online articles, so they will sort of push that deal towards Newcastle. So of the four you mentioned, I wouldn't fancy any of them, but in terms of the one I would like to see, it's probably Aaron Ramsey from Juventus. Bring him in on a 6 month loan with an option to buy in the summer. I think that's fairly risk free. And you get a player who's been around. I've talked to him about him a lot on the podcast in the last couple of weeks. He's a bit of what we need at the minute, I think, as the Newcastle squad goes into a massive sort of 6 or 7 weeks as for their Premier League future.
I'm a big fan of Aaron Ramsey. Looks like he will be leaving Juventus, well, definitely at the summer, if not over this next few weeks on a loan. But he's an absolutely sterling Rolls Royce of a player, is Aaron Ramsey. Right, we're going to talk more about the FA Cup next.
Also, sorry, Jim. When we're talking about Coutinho, he's actually signed for Villa.
Has that happened?
Yeah, it was announced just as we started the podcast. So that's he's joined on loan for the rest of the season. So that's in and done. And yeah, Coutinho's in Birmingham.
Done deal. I imagine Barcelona are paying
from Barcelona to Birmingham. Wow.
I imagine that Barcelona are paying a very large portion of his wages for that deal as well. I can't see it but being.
Yeah, if I was Coutinho, I'd be demanding the same.
Right, we are going to talk back about the FA Cup next. We're going to test Joel Marley and your knowledge of the previous giant killings from the Cup's history. We'll do it next on Football Social Daily.
Football's Social Daily. Find more great sport at sport-social.co.uk. Football's Social Daily. Subscribe to the podcast now so you never miss an episode.
As we go into the FA Cup weekend, final bit of Football Social Daily today is testing Joel and Marley's knowledge of FA Cup giant killings. Play along at home. So I'm going to ask you who put the big name team out in certain seasons and see if you can work it out. There'll be a couple of clues if you can't get it first. So here we go. First question. Buzz in with your name. Who put Chelsea out in the 2014-2015 season? Who knocked them out of the FA Cup?
Bradford.
Very good,
yeah,
Joel.
Bradford, yeah.
I wasn't expecting that. That was brilliant. League One Bradford knocked them out.
I remember that. It was 4-2, wasn't it?
It was 4-2. Chelsea were 2-0 up. It finished 4-2. It was Chelsea's earliest exit from the FA Cup in history. A brilliant early point for Joel. Right, next up. In 2000-2001, who put Leicester City to the sword in the FA Cup?
Sheffield Wednesday.
Incorrect. The opposition manager was Laurie Sanchez, and the opposition were in the second division.
Rotherham.
Tranmere Rovers.
Incorrect. The winning goal was scored by Ross Essendoe, who had replied to an advert on Teletext a couple of days before asking for a Ford player to join the club on a 2-week contract because they had so many injuries.
Sounds like my local team.
I feel like I know this, but I can't.
Leicester City 1.
Barnett.
Wickham Wanderers 2.
Wickham.
That's before my time, that.
Joel's still 1-0 up.
To be fair, I was only 9.
Last season, who knocked Leeds out of the FA Cup? It was a League 2 side. Score was 3-0.
The one where they had the Towie fella playing for them. Crawley Town.
Correct. Well done, Marley. Yes. Good grab. One all, boys.
I feel like I've peaked like England in the final. I scored too early.
The group stages, I think. Right. In 2012-2013, who was it that knocked Manchester City out of the FA Cup? It was the final. Everyone expected Manchester City to win this.
Oh, Wigan.
It was Wigan Athletic Ben Watson with the winner at the death. Congratulations. And Wigan were relegated from the Premier League just 10 days after that FA Cup victory.
Played in Europe in the Championship. Brilliant.
2-1 is to Joel at the moment. This is the last one. You need this, Marley, for the draw. Who put Arsenal out in 1991-1992?
Oh, for God's sake.
One of the most famous giant killings of all time, this, in the FA Cup.
Come on, I'm not an FA Cup merchant like that. Wrexham.
Boo!
Oh, well, Joel's on his phone.
Wow. No, I swear to God, I that was a pump, that.
Featuring former Football Social Daily pundit Mickey Thomas, whose free kick is shown on TV every time there is any mention of a giant killing. You see clips of that famous victory, Wrexham 2, Arsenal 1. That's it. And that is very similar to the scoreline of the game, because Joel wins 3-1.
One for the books, that one for the books.
I'm awful at years that things happened at with football. I'm honestly terrible. But I'm just glad that you did. I could have swore, Jim, on my life that you were going to have Newcastle's defeat to Hereford in there in like 1974 or something. And I would have got it in an instant because I knew where you were going with it. But you didn't stitch me up. So happy days.
Well, it would have been a bit of an unfair advantage, really, because I knew that you would have known that. And Joel wouldn't have, so that would have been unfair. But that is it for today's Football Social Daily. Congratulations, Joel, a giant killing of our own to wrap up today's podcast. Tomorrow's Dugout, that's going to be available. Well, in fact, it's going to be later on today, later on Friday evening. You'll be able to get that podcast. Niall and the boys having a chat about everything interesting in the FA Cup. And we'll see you soon for the next Football Social Daily.
Football Social Daily. Subscribe to the podcast now so you never miss an episode.